guys, welcome back. This is Taylor Kovar and Jeremy Gilliam, and welcome to the Millionaire Marriage Show. We are super excited today. We have regional, as they would call it, celebrities, but worldwide celebrities, David and Melissa Radke here with us. Melissa is the author of the book Eat Cake, Be Brave. Their videos have been viewed hundreds of millions of times, I'm going to say, on social media. Huge hits have just dominated social media over the last couple of years, and they're right here from our hometown. So I'm thrilled to have you here. We're shooting from my home, and so we're very excited. David and Melissa, welcome. And I would just love to hear, what's your love story? Tell us a little about yourself. Tell us your love story, and we'll kick it off that way.
Well, thank you so much for having us. I'm happy to be here. Are you?
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I say that because I'm a friend of the camera and I'm a friend of the microphone. And David is not. David is the
behind the scenes.
He does. He likes the behind the scenes. I think that's why we're a perfect fit, because I like the front of the scenes. But our love story is honestly not super special. Met in college. I wouldn't even call it a love story as much as I would call it a friendship story that turned into love.
The best kind.
The best kind. He actually asked me to go pay a phone. Was it a phone bill or electric bill?
We were really stepping it up. We were getting a phone line in our dorm room.
Nice. Oh, this was the 90s, fancy. Everybody.
Uptown. Okay. We were uptown. And I actually said, hey, you want to go with me when I set it up?
And so I said, sure. I was walking across campus and I hopped in his car with him. We knew each other a little bit, you know, but I knew he wasn't a serial killer. So I jumped in the car with him and we went and ended up laughing our heads off. And I thought, this guy, this is an idiot. This is my kind of guy right here. And he told me later that he went to bed that night and he told his roommate, I've got to get to know that girl better. There's just something about her. I want to be her best friend, is what he said. And boy, he did too. We became fast friends. So fast, in fact, that I fixed him up with a girl on my hall at school. And honestly, that's because I did not grow up dating a lot at all. I was every guy's best friend, right? I was every guy's buddy, but I was never always the bridesmaid, never a bride kind of thing. And so I didn't date in high school. And so I did not think David would ever be interested in me other than just a good time, just a friend, you know? So I fixed him up with girlfriends on my hall.
The podcast listener can see how attractive I am.
Yeah. So I fixed him up with a girl on my hall. She was the head cheerleader at our school. Wow. And she liked him a lot. They seemed to, I thought he liked her too.
She was nice.
But he was dating her, I found out, for her car, because she drove a really awesome car. And whenever they would go out on a date, she would let him drive it.
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay.
There is nothing wrong with that.
This is going to date me, but it was the year the Eagle Talon came out. I don't know if y'all remember that.
No, because they were probably just.
It sounds cool.
I don't know what it is, but I'm for it.
Yeah. It was a really nice sports car, and she let me drive it. So I
was scheduled to go out with him one night. We were going to go Christmas shopping, he and I. And he asked me, unbeknownst to me, he had broken a date with her. And to go Christmas shopping with me. And she was furious. And she came to my room, her and all of the cheerleaders on the cheerleading team. And they asked me if I would record him talking about her. Get him to talk about me and record it.
That sounds like a movie.
This
is real life.
I know. And Reese Witherspoon should play this.
She should.
Anyway.
We'll put a plug in.
Yeah. So I'll put a Sony Walkman. I know y'all are so much younger than us. But anyway, I put a Sony Walkman in the top of my purse and I left it open so that I could record him. I got in the car with him and I said, you know, you are so stupid. Why did you break a date with her? We could have gone Christmas shopping anytime. And why would you do that? I mean, she likes you. And what's the deal, y'all? I mean, you know, and I remember him saying, you know, I'm only dating her for that car, right? And I was like, oh my word, we are recording this. But it was actually that night he took me to eat at this really fancy restaurant. Okay. I don't want your listeners to be intimidated by me and our wealth, but it was called Macaroni Grill.
Ooh.
And I know everybody right now is like, oh, they're so fancy.
And you're in my home right now. Wow. Like, guys, we should have cleaned up more.
But it was that night at Macaroni Grill that he told me, with the tape running, that he was in love with me and that I was his very best friend and he'd fallen in love with me and he wanted to know if I would consider dating him. And this is all on tape.
Wow.
And we got back to the room that night and the whole cheerleading squad was sitting in the room waiting for me to play the tape. And so I did.
Oh, no.
Because that's what you do when you were never asked to prom. And that's what you do when you never got to date. And all the cheerleaders did. So, yes, I put it in and I played it for him. And then he found out about it and he took the tape and he put it underneath the front wheel of his car and he backed over it like 1,000 times and crushed that tape to smithereens. And we don't have that tape today.
What would you give for to have that tape right now?
Oh, my goodness.
I really, my rage has gotten much better.
That's good.
I really wish we had that. I would do anything for that.
But as you know, I will be totally honest with you guys. I called my mother that night. I cannot believe I'm telling this. Please, no. David was my first kiss. Everything. Okay. I called my mother and I said to my mom on the phone from college, and then he backed over it, and then he backed over it again, and he was so furious. And my mother said, "And then what happened, Melissa?" And I said, "And then we made out." We made out so hard. And my mother goes, "Don't call me anymore and tell me this stuff. It upsets me." That's how David and I fell in love.
That's a pretty great love story. I mean, you say it's not a story. I love that story. That's really great. And I have zero problem with dating somebody for their car. So Megan and I have been dating previously before we turned 16. But when she turned 16, she got, her parents bought her a brand new T-top Camaro, right? Black. I was driving a 15-year-old beater. And so everywhere we went, we drove her car, right?
Oh,
and
bet.
So everybody thought it was mine. I was like, yeah, sure it is. I mean, we ended up getting married. But yeah, it worked out. So
you were high school sweethearts.
We were, yes. Yeah.
And that works. That's
it did.
Really
it
real.
Does work. It does. So definitely. I mean, there's been issues here and there, obviously, but we've worked it out. And we raised each other. And
yeah.
I thought she was through growing because she's tall. And she thought I was going to continue to grow. And I haven't. So, I mean, we're both here. But yeah, so we're high school sweethearts. Been together 20 something years.
How long have you been married?
We've been married 15. Well, almost 15.
Don't get that wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Almost 15.
Almost 15. But yeah. You were together for many
since
years.
We were 14. So we've been together 21 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we got married at 20 and 21. We've been together 27 years. And we can't believe that we've made it, because when you get married so young, you are continuing to grow and change and evolve.
Absolutely.
I mean, you are not at 40 who you were at 20.
Yeah.
And so many marriages, when they start off young like that, they really can't make it through all of those life changes and what life throws at you. And so I'm amazed at us. I'm proud of us. And I'm committed to us for sure. But I mean, man, God is good, because we've been through some stuff.
He is. And that's what I tell people all the time. Like, these young couples that we talk to, it's good to go through stuff. You know, diamonds are formed under pressure. And I look back at looking at several of the things that Megan and I have went through. And like, even though I hated going through that and I wouldn't want to go through it again, I'm so thankful that we did, because it definitely made us who we are.
Yeah.
It built our relationship. It solidified our relationship with God and with each other. And so I completely understand.
Yeah.
And so let's get into some more of your story, right? So I know in your book, Eat Cake, Be Brave, mm-hmm. and some of the things y'all have talked about, your infertility journey. Can we talk about that? A lot of our listeners deal with infertility. It's something a lot of young couples deal with, and there's a lot of stress and hurt and things that go in that. Do you mind kind of sharing that story?
Oh, no, we're an open book. You ask, we'll tell you.
Awesome. All right. So how'd you find out? Like, what was that? What's that story? Throwing stuff.
Well, we had been married for 4 years. Everybody will always tell you when you first get married, hold off on having children, hold off on having children. And so we said, okay, you know, and we moved to Nashville. We wanted to be in the music business. I wanted to be a singer. He wanted to be a manager. So we thought that'd be perfect. And so we moved there to kind of pursue those dreams. And so we did hold off. But by the time I was 24, my clock was ticking. And some people think that's a myth. It's not for a woman. You begin to want children. And we tried for about a year to no success. And so we eventually made an appointment and went in, and we were diagnosed with unexplained infertility. Now, that's after many doctor's visits, but there was just, they tested him, they tested me, they looked at this, they, you know, did blood work, you name it, everything they could. And that's what they came back with, unexplained infertility, which is such a punch in the gut, because what that means is you can't have kids and we don't know why. See you later.
Man.
And, Dave, what all did we try? I mean, I can't think of anything we didn't.
The only thing we did not try was in vitro.
Right. We did not try IVF, and that's only because we were broke as convicts. Yeah. I mean, we really were.
We would have tried that.
Yeah.
So it was just a long journey, and that was so frustrating in We didn't have it, especially as a man. I think you always want to fix something or you want to find a solution. And multiple doctors, multiple tests, there was no reason for it. And then we started getting surprised by having pregnancies, but then we couldn't keep the pregnancy. And so we had multiple miscarriages.
So it took us about 4 years to get pregnant the first time. And then we miscarried at about 7 weeks. And then it took us about 2.5 years to get pregnant the second time. And then we miscarried about 7 weeks. And then it took us another year to get pregnant. So eventually we could see that over long periods of time, we could get pregnant, but then to be unsuccessful at it. You talk about, as a woman, feeling like you are failing on all fronts. I can't get pregnant like my girlfriends. Then when I do, I can't keep the pregnancy like my girlfriends. Yeah. Then I can't have the baby. I mean, it just was so defeating. And I had already been someone that battled depression and anxiety a lot in my younger years. And so it really was truly, I was drowning in the deep end. That's the only way I can describe it. Infertility is so heartbreaking. It makes your marriage feel like a science project every time you want to have sex. It doesn't feel authentic. It feels like a task. I felt like I was a letdown to him. He wanted to have children as bad as I did. I thought I was a letdown to him. He felt like he was a failure to me because he was like, what if it's my problem? I mean, it's so grim.
And I think to add insult to injury, we were over a Sunday school class at our church that had, I don't know, 80 to 100 people in it. All young couples. It felt like every single week somebody was bumping into each other, getting pregnant and all these baby showers and all these, you know, celebrations while we're over here hurting. And
as the leader of the Sunday school class, who helps throw the shower?
Yeah.
I do. And so I started seeing a counselor, a therapist about it because it was just so hard on my emotions. And so I just feel for women so much who are dealing with this, but I'll never forget one thing he said to me. He said, Melissa, why don't you just start being honest about your feelings? When a baby shower is going to be held and you're invited or whatever, you're asked to hostess, why don't you say this? I can't. I'm really, really happy for you, but I'm just really sad for me. He said, just be honest with people. I'll never forget him saying that. And I actually did it. It took a lot of nerve. I will never forget. I was on the phone one time and I said, Aaron, I can't come to your baby shower because although I'm very, very happy for you, I'm just really sad for me. And I remember her going, you know what? That's okay. I'm so glad you said something. I mean, that was the first time I started just being truthful about how I felt, how we felt. We were growing apart during that time. I was depressed. I was just so full of sadness. And it took a toll on us. And so I'll let you ask questions, but yeah, it was a really difficult time.
So I guess what I'm curious about, because that is obviously, as you guys know, I have to tell you this, something very, very difficult to navigate as a couple. And I guess I'm just like, my mind goes to like couples I've worked with in therapy and their struggles with it. I guess what I'm curious about, how did you guys keep yourselves from completely ripping apart as a couple? Because I know there's been a few couples I've worked with that their marriage is completely dissolved over it. I mean, they couldn't tolerate the tension that not being able to have kids brought. So what was that like for you guys? And how did you guys just not come apart at the seams?
Well, I would say on the first miscarriage, we did relatively well, I guess. We tend to kind of lean into each other and support of friends and family and those kind of things.
And this is 4 years in? Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so, well, it was probably a little bit further because we didn't even try starting until 4 years.
But it was four years before we got pregnant.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, infertility. Yeah.
And so I felt like we handled, if that's the best way to say it, we handled it okay. The second miscarriage, we did not. And it almost did completely tear us apart because for whatever reason, we didn't do what we did on the first miscarriage. We both kind of went to our own corners and she grieved her way and I grieved my way. And all of a sudden we have this massive kind of chasm between us and we were really, really close on the verge of it.
We also had done something that has little to do with infertility, but I'd still like to talk about it. During this time, David and I were the leaders, like we said, of this Sunday school class, and we had a lot of young couple friends, and we did something that I don't think is talked about enough. We began to erase some of the guardrails around our marriage. It seems to be funny to be really off color sometimes with your friends. Sex talk, sex jokes, some things like that. As I've gotten older, I've realized the harm that can do to your marriage. It erases boundaries around your marriage, and it allows people to see your marriage and speak into it and laugh about sex and all that. And what I hope I'm just explaining that correctly, but
when you have those conversations with other couples, it makes you feel more comfortable to talk about those things that you really shouldn't just be talking about your spouse.
Definitely. We just an episode over boundaries in marriage, and a lot of it was about getting too comfortable with other couples. Yeah.
Well, what happened was we got way too comfortable with our best couple friend. And at the time, they were going through a separation and a bad place in their marriage, as were we. And David and her began to confide in each other. And why wouldn't he? I hated him. I mean, I kept losing babies and blaming him, and I hated myself, and I was gaining weight, and my face was breaking out. I didn't want anybody to touch me because the pills I was taking and the injections I was given make me angry and hormonal, and I'm mad at the world. So we had nowhere to go and nobody to talk to. And because we had blurred those lines, she felt an access to him. And so David ended up having what I guess our culture would call an emotional affair with her. And I found out about it. And I knew then that I had just failed as a woman. I now couldn't do anything. I couldn't even hold this marriage together. And so I left David and I came back home to Lufkin, to where my parents lived. We were in Nashville at the time. And I left him, and I think it was during those 2 weeks that David and I just knew we just were crazy about each other. Like, this was worth fighting for. This was worth going home for. It was worth redrawing those lines and pulling up the guardrails again. Like, he was worth the fight. I didn't want to lose this too. If I'm going to lose pregnancies, that's one thing, but I can't also lose him. And so we went to marriage counseling, and we have been in marriage counseling on and off through the years. It has been a savior for us. I believe in it wholeheartedly. Gone are the days when that is taboo.
Thankfully. Yes.
Gone are the days. And so we openly talk about the fact that we've had to seek counseling several times in our marriage. It's done better for us. It's made us stronger every time. And thank goodness we did, because We worked on our marriage. Our marriage was saved. Their marriage wasn't. It ended. Mm-hmm. But ours didn't, and it became stronger. And I swear that must be because God knew what was coming, because we had not dealt with the worst of it yet. After that, we had a couple of more miscarriages, and then we got pregnant for real. Like, we got pregnant for real. We passed the 7-week mark. We passed the 9-week mark. We passed the 12-week mark. Every time we went to the doctor, we got more excited, and there was the baby and there was the baby, and the baby was moving around, and the baby was kicking, and this was it. We were so excited, and it was a beautiful time. I mean, gifts started pouring in because everybody in our community and our village was like, finally. It was so exciting. And then we went to an appointment, and the doctor said, something's wrong, and it's above my pay grade. You're going to have to go see a specialist. We went to Vanderbilt Hospital to a specialist there in high-risk pregnancies, and our baby was very sick. And so what they told us was, listen, you're going to carry this child probably to full term, but it won't live. And our son, his name was Elisha, he was born on Christmas morning of 2005. He came several weeks early. He was supposed to be born near Valentine's. He came several weeks early, and it was really remarkable because my family was due to fly in the next day and spend Christmas with us. Because of the high-risk pregnancy, I couldn't fly. They were scheduled to fly in and spend Christmas with us, but I went into labor early. And so I had to call them. And when I called them from Vanderbilt Hospital, I could hear, it was Christmas Eve night, I could hear everyone laughing and opening gifts and eating. And I had to say to my mom, Mom, I'm in the hospital and he's coming early. And they couldn't get to me and she couldn't be there. But I can't think of anything better to have happened, because when he was born, we had an hour and a half with him, and it was just us. There was no passing him around to family members. There was no everybody getting their few minutes with him. We got every bit of that time, and it was a really precious, but we made it through that because we had made it through the hard stuff before. Like, every single time, God just helped us get smarter and stronger and wiser, because he knew what was coming, you know? And if we could handle these other things, then we could handle burying a child. And so on December 27th, he was born on the 25th, and on the 27th, we placed this tiny little white casket into the ground, and Christmas has never been the same for us. Wow. I remember going out to the cemetery when his tombstone finally came. You know, it takes a little while for the tombstone to come and just show up and everything. And so he'd been buried there, and there was fresh flowers still. And I remember going out and just standing there and saying, God, I was so angry. And I said, God, you owe me. You owe me. And of course he didn't, but that's what you say in your anger. You owe me. I want a child. Why would you do on Christmas? Are you kidding me? On Christmas? Why would you do Christmas of all time? So I have to remember this every year for the rest of my life. And I will never forget, God spoke to me and he said, I chose Christmas because I know what your future looks like. And I don't want you to ever be alone on that day. I don't want you to ever be alone on that day. And I know that in the coming years, your house will be full. And so on Christmas Day, you don't ever have to worry about being alone and being lonely on the day you lost him. And that could not be more true. We have two children, both through adoption. Our house on Christmas Day is loud and boisterous and full of love and fighting and throwing food and unwrapping gifts. And I'm never alone now. On Christmas Day, I never have to be alone in that grief. God, as he always does, provides and restores, you know, what you lose, he gives back tenfold. Wow. So
that's a tremendous story. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I've been up here wiping tears the whole time. So no, it's tremendous. And thank you so much for speaking. I know that so many couples go through things in their marriage, and we tend to hold it in, right? We don't want other people to know that we're vulnerable, or that we failed, or that we have mistakes, that we're not, you know, good enough, or that we're not perfect, right? From the outside looking in. And so thank you so much for saying that. David, I'm curious, I mean, while y'all are going through this and you know, the loss of children and all of that, how are you handling that as a husband and being there for Melissa?
You know, I think it kind of came in waves, you know, because a lot of times as men, we may think, okay, I got to be strong for my wife. I got to be, you know, strong and not let her see my pain and those kind of things. But I think we had at that point been married long enough and we had been through enough that there were those times where I would just break down and start, you know, just start crying with her because it was just so overwhelming. You know, I also think that a lot of times, you know, because the mother is carrying the child, there's the sympathy for her. There's the, you know, what she's going through, but the father feels it's, I'm not at all saying it's the same, but they feel a lot of emotion and they feel a lot of pain in that process as well too. So I think it's just like life. It's just good days, bad days. Some days you're proud of how you responded. Some days you're like, should have done a little different, you know, shouldn't have got mad at whatever that was, you know, but it's just a journey and just a process.
I'll share a special memory. I hope you're okay with me sharing this. He's sitting here crying anyway, if you're listening to this podcast. So it's okay, I think.
Yeah. I think there's about that.
I wouldn't want to disrespect him and share something out of line, but I know he won't care. But one day I was big and pregnant, and I had on my lunch hour, I came home. I was working at a church, and I came home and David was laying on the floor of our living room, just literally curled up in a fetal position. When I walked in, his back was to me, but I could tell he was shaking and he was crying. And he had on the song of all things, "Blessed be your name on the road marked with suffering, though there's pain in the offering, blessed be your name." And he was crying. And I just remember it was hard to get down on the floor with my big pregnant belly, but I did. And I just held him because I don't think that the fathers and the husbands are often held. the mothers are,
yeah,
but they grieve too. Husbands who have to walk the road of infertility, they grieve too. And they're not often cared for the same way the wife is, but it's so needed. Yes. I mean, let us not forget them. Let us not forget the good man who has to stand there and hold her hand while she's told, you lost that pregnancy. Let's not forget the good man who has to pay for that casket. Let's not forget the good man who wants a son to bear his name and can't. I just feel for those couples so much. David and I are obviously so blessed with children, but that came through adoption. So don't even get me started on how much I love adoption. Don't even get me started.
I have 5 adopted siblings.
And, do you?
And probably a dozen nieces and nephews that are adopted.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So listen, you may hear our tears on the podcast or see our tears on a video, but I can assure you, our hearts are healed and our hearts are whole. These Radke kids are bad, but man, they are loved. They are so loved.
I've seen a few things in the show.
They're terrible. Oh, they're some of the worst kids you've ever met. But that's just because they're so dadgum spoiled and they're a lot of fun and nobody would ever know. The kids at school tell them all the time, Remy, you are just like your mama. And Remy will say, that can't be possible. I'm adopted. But
oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I do want to go back. I know we were turning a corner kind of, but I do, you said something that I think is really crucial, that I think for a long time I thought, and this was before a fair amount of, you know, going to counseling and therapy and those kind of things, that, well, I just let it roll off my back. I don't let it affect me emotionally. And we did, we had a counselor friend of ours say, do you honestly think that's true? Do you really think that's true? But what happens is we just tuck it down and we tuck it down and we tuck it down. At some point, it's going to overflow. Yeah. And that can be in rage. That can be an emotional breakdown. It can be in making idiotic decisions.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be processed. So as she was saying, yeah, that, as far as about the men, I know a lot of times we view it as a sign of weakness, or maybe the culture that we were raised in, and hopefully we're in a little different culture now than maybe when we were younger. It's like a sign of weakness for a man to cry, or it's a sign of weakness to say, hey, I need to talk through this because I'm not feeling great about this. So just encourage any listeners that if anything, it's a sign of strength.
That's right.
It's not at all a sign of a weakness.
I really appreciate you saying that. So I tell people all the time, and it kind of sounds like I could definitely going through grief and then dealing with emotions. Like it's like taxes. You pay now or pay later, but you're going to pay.
Oh yeah,
you're going to pay it. And oftentimes it's worse later. Mm-hmm. So I do have a question though. First, thank you guys so much for your transparency and your openness. I'm like having to keep myself from absolutely falling apart, because I know the journey has been a little difficult, but you guys are here and you've held on together, and it's really a beautiful story. It really, really is. I do have a question though about, because again, I not only do I work with people, I have a lot of friends that are going through challenges with infertility, then also challenges with adopting. What was that like for the kiddos as they got older? How did you guys discuss it with them? Because it sounds like they know.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you guys discuss that with them? Because I'm thinking of some of our listeners that are going through this and they're going, well, how do I navigate this? Because if they're in the process of adopting and they have little ones, what does that look like? Because it sounds like it's worked out well with the two kiddos y'all have.
Mm-hmm.
So what did that look like for you guys?
Well, I would say first, we've had several friends that have gone through like the adoption journey. And to be honest, I don't feel like we can always speak real well into the normal adoption process, because Remy, our daughter, who is 15 now, it was kind of a friend of a friend that called us. They had a placement. They changed their mind. The people that were going to adopt changed their mind. And I believe it was all within like a 6-week window that it went from her making a decision to be us. We were in Tennessee. The baby was in Texas. It was really different as far as that. I was actually finishing law school. And because I was in law school, I had connections to even help the legal side of stuff, because otherwise there's no way it would have happened in that time frame. And so we've heard so many stories, and I just don't want us to kind of go through that, because there's been people with a lot of pain in adoption.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of not only years of trying to have an adoption or they experience the loss of a child, which is very real in the adoption process. So our situation's a little different, very similar with our son Rocco in a very short amount of time.
We were really blessed to not have to walk that, you know, some people that, you know, they want to adopt and it takes years. I mean, ours happened really quickly. We're big proponents of, if you want to adopt, like, tell people, don't keep that a secret, because both of our children came to us through word of mouth. Like people who said, hey, I heard the Radkeys are looking to adopt.
Wow.
Both of our children came that way. Wow. And so, like, I know so many young couples who are thinking about adopting, but we're not telling anybody. Tell people.
Yeah.
Because somebody knows somebody who may know a young girl who is trying to make that decision. But one of the best advice we got was when we were going through the adoption with Remy, before she was even born, our social worker said, can I just give y'all a piece of advice? Tell her she's adopted. Tell her from the moment she can understand anything. Make it a part of her childhood, of her life. That was great advice for us. And the way
let her discover that she was adopted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we used the movie Tarzan, the little Disney animated Tarzan. Remy loved it. I started playing it for her when she was 2 or 3. She loved it, and she would say, I know, watch a movie. I know, watch a movie. And that means I want to watch a movie. I say, which one? She'd say, Tarzan. I'd put it in. And finally, one day, I said, you know how that gorilla found Tarzan, and that gorilla took Tarzan back to life? That's called adoption. Did you know that you're adopted? And that's how I did it. I used the movie Tarzan, and she could relate to that. After that, it was never a discussion. She always knew. I've always made sure my kids could ask me any questions. We refer to each birth mom by saying Miss in front of their name. So Miss Danielle, or, you know, Miss, I'm going to leave that name blank, but because both of my kids come from different mothers. It's not like they were brother and sister. Yeah. We refer to them as Miss in our house, and they can ask questions. They can ask me. I mean, if sometimes just randomly we'll be watching a TV show and Remy will pause it and say, hey, did Miss Danielle ever, Remy asked me one time, what color hair did Miss Danielle have? And so I stop and I tell her everything I know, because why not? That's her history. And so.
And both birth mothers are very, I mean, they're heroes in our house.
We talk about them with great respect.
I've seen some of your Facebook posts to the moms.
Oh, absolutely. And
that's phenomenal.
Well, both of them have found us on Facebook and both of them have reached out. I'd like to tell you, if I could, about Remy's. So there is a chapter in my book that I wrote called Dear Miss Danielle, and it is a letter to Remy's birth mom. Now, just FYI, her name is not Danielle, but that's what we call her on social media and for things like this. Remy knows what her real name is. And I wrote it called Dear Miss Danielle. And I wrote it in reference to a ball game when Remy was little, a softball game, that Remy was asked to pitch. And she was very nervous. And in the middle of the game, David walked out on the mound and he gave her a pep talk. And one of the coaches took a picture. It's a beautiful picture of David leaning over talking to her. And I said, Miss Danielle, did anybody ever do that for you? Did anybody ever walk out on the mound and tell you what a good job you were doing? Did anybody ever walk out and tell you how brave you were? Did they ever do that? Because if they didn't, let me be the first to say, with this child, you knocked it out of the park. You knocked it out of the park. What you did for us was so brave. You did it in front of so many people, and you could have changed your mind, but you didn't. And I referenced her in this story. Y'all, about a year ago, a girl that works for me sent me a text, and she said, Melissa, I check your Facebook messages every day. I've highlighted one. I think you need to go read it. And this is all it said. Dear Melissa, I found you on Facebook. I read your book. No one ever told me that. And yeah, I played softball too. And I mean, come on, let's just take a minute for the girls who said, I want to keep this baby, but I want to make sure that it has everything, and I can't give it everything. So yeah, needless to say, in our house, those are some hero women right there. Those are some hero women. We talk about them with respect. I make sure my children think that they are the most. They've not met them, and I don't think my kids are ready for that just yet. My kids are very different. I think Remy would probably be more ready than Rocco. But when that day comes, and if they ask, heck yeah, you get to meet her. I'm not afraid of that. we're very confident. We've raised confident kids. We're confident in our love. They're confident in our love. I don't want to raise my kids and be those nervous parents that what if they meet? Let them, you know? So adoption's a beautiful thing for us.
It's a beautiful story you guys have. I've cried a few times on our podcast, never this much. And so
I'm sorry.
No, really? I love it.
I feel bad if no one has ever heard of us or listened to us. They're like, wow, this couple is so emotional and
depressing.
And he keeps crying all the time. No. We're actually pretty funny.
Literally the life of the party. I don't know what's going on.
I'm sitting here thinking, man, we could have had like 8 episodes off of what we just talked about already. Like, man, how can we just whack every episode?
And I guess my thought is the fact that you guys are so transparent with this.
Yes.
Because I know it's so difficult for couples to talk about. I mean, going through one of the things y'all have gone through, but multiple things, it's difficult for them to talk about any one of them. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you guys are open about it, I think it gives, at least in my opinion, I think it gives couples hope that they've been through some really tough stuff and look where they are here now. Yeah. I mean, the journey has been difficult, but on the other side of it, you're going, wow, look what God's done. Look where he's brought us and look at this story that we have. Yeah, challenges along the way, but I think it can give people hope that if y'all went through it, anyone can go through it.
David and I always say, you know, we now have a platform on social media that I truly believe that we have. I don't believe it's because I wear my makeup great or I'm a social influencer because of how I dress. Lord knows that ain't it. I think it's because we realized a long time ago, Brene Brown always says that your vulnerability is a superpower. Mm-hmm. And we bought into that. And we've never lied online. What we share, the products we share, we use, the stories we tell are true, and the marriage we have is real. And we've never shied away from that. And I think people are drawn to it.
Yeah.
But I believe that when I tell people, David and I get a kick out of it. We tell people all the time, look, other than the fact that neither of us have been drug mules for the cartel, there's nothing we haven't been through. Other than that, and we're open to that.
To be honest,
whatever it takes to pay the bills.
After watching Ozark, we're kind of,
watching Better Call Saul right now. We're like, come on, we can earn a couple thousand.
We can do this, yeah.
But honestly, other than that, there's nothing we haven't been through, and I think it was God's preparation to put, because he knew this platform was coming and that people needed, marriages needed hope.
Yeah.
And they needed friendly faces saying, girl, I've been there. Man, I've been there. And I don't know how people make it without Jesus in their marriages. And I'm just not afraid to say that to people. Yeah. And I know that it might not be.
Amen.
PC on social media, and Facebook has put me in jail so many times and pulled down my videos. I just keep saying, I can say all day, I don't know how marriages make it without Jesus. You can say that all day long, but like tell people how to meet him, right? Yeah, yeah. Like don't just say, I don't know how y'all do it without God. Tell them how to meet God.
Yeah.
Like let's lead people to that. So I put a post up the other day. I put the plan of salvation. I said, and if you have questions, email me. Women emailed me. That's awesome. They email me and they'll say, one email said just the other day, something has been missing. And whatever it is you're talking about, that might be it because I've tried everything else and nothing is filling this hole in my heart. What do I do? And I just wrote her back. Here's what you do. This you ask this, you pray this,
yeah.
And then there. Let's give them hope.
Yeah. That's what we're looking for. I think people are hungry, you know, they're hungry for hope and they're hungry for that God-sized hole mm-hmm. in their heart and in their life. And I just thank you both for being so transparent, being here. It's obvious that you're on the same team and we're huge advocates of you're your marriage. You're on the same team. You can't, you know, compare yourself to other teams. It's you. And mm-hmm. so thank you. You're an inspiration to everyone that I know that we talk to me and my wife. And I'm honored that you're here in my home talking and spending time with us this morning. We'd love to have you back sometime.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us where all our listeners can find you at online? I know Radke is out there. So what's your main platforms?
Go for it, babe. You're the manager.
Oh, yeah. That's your job.
You're the manager. Manage me. Come on.
Well, you can definitely go to melissaradke.com, her webpage. But she's very, very active on Facebook and Instagram. And she's kind of becoming a Twitter phenom now.
No, really? Not Twitter. TikTok.
I'm sorry.
TikTok. Okay.
I can't work Twitter, yeah. David. I can't talk short sentences.
Yeah. Well, and those.
I can't.
Well, that's true. And those Twitter people are so angry.
They are really angry.
TikTok. She's actually become a little TikTok phenom, which is kind of funny, but
yeah. I know the TikTokers are like, she's old, get her off of here. But you know what? I'm racking up the followers. So
there you go.
I find that people keep following you if you talk about your mother enough. And I do talk about her all the time. And they're like, oh my gosh. So we have so much fun online. We hope that we are good stewards with our platform. We really do. It's been a hard road, you know, because David left. He was a corporate attorney here in town for a large business. He left to come and manage me because really entertainment law is his favorite thing. That's what he studied. And so he came to manage me. We're a great partnership. We are very rare in that David and I love working together. We love hanging out together. Like we just like that. I have all my girlfriends are like, I would kill my husband, but I like being with him. He's so funny. And so we're a great partnership and we give God the glory for it. I hope he's honored by what we do on that platform and that we use it wisely because we like to make people laugh. If you can get them to laugh, you can get them to listen.
Well, y'all do very, very well at it. We were watching several of your videos even before you got here this morning, and I love watching y'all on camera. We will make sure we include all of those links and links to your book on our podcast notes, and we will see you next show.
Have us anytime. We'll come
back.
Thank you. See you guys.
Thank you.